you were discussing the prayers by Lord Shiva.
And
he's glorifying in the initial 32 verses, he's glorifying Lord himself. And then after that, from 32, he's glorifying the form of the Lord and his speeches.
Any other points?
He is especially glorifying Lord Anuruddha for control of mind.
Anything else?
The Pracetas are so humble that they say that the Lord advents to deliver the fallen souls, and hence they request that they should be delivered.
Anything else?
Therefore, I was also mentioning about the former Jnana Pibandhastya Jnana Minasalakya verse, how we should offer our respect to the Lord and to the Lord.
Any other points?
Those who want to desire their spiritual advancement, they should always concentrate on the root of the Lord. Meditate on the root of the Lord all the time.
A couple of verses and prayers are similar to Queen Kunti's prayers.
Which ones?
About the Lord's lotus feet, and like Queen Kunti glorifies the Lord in terms of comparing with lotus. There is a similar sort of a comparison there.
Any other points?
We have realized Krishna by Srimad Bhagavatam. That is most important.
Good. Anything else?
One must practice Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti to achieve Rajanuga Bhakti. By worshipping the deities, one gets attracted and attached to the deities, and then one can enliven his lost relationship with them.
Anything else? So, we've gone into chapter 24. Chapter 24 is the prayers of Lord Shiva. So the Prachetas, there was a description in the beginning of the chapter about the dynasty of Preacher Maharaj. Finally, it arrives at the Prachetas, and it's described the Prachetas were great devotees. They renounced the kingdom and they left as princes, as young men, and they headed westward, and they came in contact with Lord Shiva at Shivaloka, which is in the Himalayas, Mount Kailash. So upon meeting Lord Shiva, the Lord Shiva offered various prayers in glorification of the Lord. And these prayers teach us how to become perfect devotees. So in the beginning, the prayers glorify the Lord, because when we begin to pray to the Lord, we must first glorify Him. So Lord Shiva is teaching us how to recite prayers to glorify the Lord. Then He glorifies the Lord's beauty, so that we may understand the beauty of His form and become attached to His form, and ultimately understand that He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is not impersonal. He is a personality. And He is the most perfect, sublime, and beautiful personality, the original personality. Now tonight we'll continue from verses 53 to 68. We're moving quite fast because I want to finish the fourth canto this year. So tonight we'll hear about the glories of bhakti. Lord Shiva glorifies the process of bhakti, of devotional service, and then he describes that Lord Krishna is the origin of everything within the creation. So by reciting these prayers of Lord Shiva, one will become perfect in Krishna consciousness. This is the process or the means to become perfect in Krishna consciousness. One has to recite prayers which have been offered by the previous acharyas. Okay, so we'll begin with verse 53, and we'll continue to verse 68. Any other points?
We were actually discussing about some of the symptoms of your devotee, how strengthy they are, how powerful they are, they can do any service. And also we were discussing about one of the trees in Goloka Vrindavan, just one tree, I forgot the tree name.
Kalpavruksha,
yes. Because of that everything has become Kalpavruksha. I was feeling like by the association of a few devotees, everyone becomes so very few.
Yeah, that's the process. Okay.
I was listening to Guru Maharaj's lecture. So he was saying that why we should pray as the prayers of exalted devotees and the acharyas. So it is one of the prime reasons is to get into the mood in which they pray. If they, we can imbibe those, that mood will be of great value.
Yeah. It teaches us what is bhakti, so that we can also learn how to offer devotional sentiments to the Lord.
We can also formulate our own prayers, but if we can get into the mood in which they are saying, it will be to that extent very useful for our purpose.
My dear Lord, those who desire to purify their existence must always engage in meditation upon your lotus feet, as described above. Those who are serious about executing their occupational duties and who want freedom from fear must take to this process of bhakti yoga. So, what is emphasized in this verse is the process of meditation. Prabhupada says this word meditation has become very fashionable, very popular in the modern world. People are always talking about going to meditation classes. But factually speaking, most people have no idea what meditation is. Meditation is for one point, dhyan. Dhyan means to fix the mind upon Krishna. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, jayato vishayam punsan sangas teshu kudayate. Most people are meditating upon sense gratification. So most people have no idea what the purpose of meditation is. But according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, the only purpose of meditation is to meditate upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, Prabhupada explains in the second and third paragraph that Varnashram Dham, the whole purpose of Varnashram Dham, is to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is how Varnashrama becomes Daivi Varnashrama or transcendental Varna and Ashrama. Otherwise, your Varna and your Ashram will remain mundane or material. You only purify your Ashram or your Varna by connecting it to Krishna. And how does it become purified? It becomes purified by engaging the process of hearing and chanting about Krishna. If you're not hearing and chanting about Krishna, you cannot become purified. Varnashram itself was rejected in the conversation between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy. Lord Chaitanya rejected the Varnashram as being external. In other words, it would not purify the soul of its material covering. It is a material covering. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya says, I'm not a Brahmana, I'm not a Vaishya, I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm not a Shudra. I'm not a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi. And gopi bhatu, pada kamala yor, dasa, dasa, anodasa. Lord Chaitanya says, I am simply a servant of the servant of the servant of the master of the gopis. How do you realize this? By hearing. By the process of shravanam, kirtanam. By hearing and chanting the glories of the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will realize your constitutional position or your lost relationship with Krishna. And then your Varnashram situation will become purified. It will become transcendental. Otherwise it will remain mundane and you'll simply take birth in this material world, in a higher or lower position. So any points?
You said Sanskrit Hare Krishna.
What does that mean? If you buy your Bhanashram duties, you've not satisfied Krishna, then they are Shrama Evi Kevalam, a useless source of time. Therefore, your Bhanashram duties, they satisfy Krishna when they are dedicated to Krishna's pleasure. How do they become dedicated to Krishna's pleasure? When we hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand what is the purpose of life. And we dedicate all of our activities to Krishna. Any other points?
When you said yesterday, when we come to material world, we have only amnesia. So we have to re-establish our relationship with Krishna.
Anything else?
Almost all the classes that I attend, you see this Gopi, Padakamaniya, Dasa, 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 and Dasa. Is there any special significance that we have to meditate on this always?
Yeah, this verse is spoken by Lord Chaitanya. Like that. So, it is emphasizing our actual position, our real position, our eternal position. We are Das, Das, Anudas. We are the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, who is the master of the Gopis. So that was Lord Chaitanya's meditation. And because we are Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers, we should also meditate in this way. Any other point? Okay. My dear Lord, the king in charge of the heavenly kingdom is also desirous of obtaining the ultimate goal of life, devotional service. Similarly, you are the ultimate destination of those who identify themselves with you, aham brahmasmi. However, it is very difficult for them to attain you, whereas a devotee can easily attain your lordship. So it is described here that there are many processes for realizing Krishna. The karmis are trying to advance. The jnanis are also trying to advance, but it is only the bhaktas who can understand Krishna as he is. Krishna says himself in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktyamam abhijanati yavanyas jasmi tatvataha. I can only be understood truthfully by the process of bhakti, of devotional service. All other processes do not lead to realization of God. They will simply lead to another birth in this material world. The karmis, the best they can attain is swagaloka, is the heavenly planets. The jnanis, the best they can attain is Brahman realization. And Prabhupada explains they simply have to come back again and be born again in this material world. So whether you go to Swaga or you go to the Brahma Jyoti, you will have to take birth again in this material world. It does not secure you a place in the material world, in the spiritual world. But Srila Prabhupada emphasizes again and again in this section of the Bhagavatam that by worshipping Krishna, you are guaranteed to enter into Vaikuntha or Goloka Vrindavan, into the spiritual world, if you seriously and sincerely follow the process of devotional service. No other process can guarantee this destination, the Param Gati, the supreme abode. So, any points?
I'm not clear about this. I'm not going to ask anything.
What is it?
If you say aham brahmasmi, then you want to go to Goloka Vrindavan.
No, aham brahmasmi means, aham means I, brahmasmi means I am spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So that usually that is chanted by those who are impersonalists.
So they go to Brahmasmi, don't they?
Yeah. Aham brahmasmi, I am spirit.
Ultimately, desire to attain perfection in Vaikuntha planet of Goloka Vrindavan.
Yeah. This indicates that it is very difficult for one to attain the ultimate goal of life and reach the supreme destination.
Aham Brahma. Aham Brahma means I am Brahma.
Hmm.
Whatever is that. I am Brahma.
Hmm. So what is your point?
What I am saying is, those who say Aham Brahma means their destination is Brahma.
Generally, yeah.
So, but here they say, ultimately desire their imperfection is looking back onto looking in the world. So
those who identify themselves as Aham Brahmasmi also ultimately desire to attain perfection, perfect liberation in the Vaikuntha planets or Goloka Vrindavan. So Prabhupada is pointing, this is ultimately the desire of the soul. This is what everyone is looking for. Right? As George Harrison has written in the beginning of the Krishna book, George Harrison says, everyone is searching after Krishna, but not everyone knows it. So ultimately even the impersonalists, they're searching after Krishna, but they do not realize that.
Okay.
So, anything else?
Even a jnani ultimately comes to bhakti, in the sense a perfect jnani doesn't, if he stops with jnana only, then it's a problem, but if he progresses further, he comes to bhakti, and that's what Prabhupada probably might be saying, that ultimately he also comes to Vaikuntha, because of a jnani doesn't stop with it. He ultimately comes to bhakti.
Depends on his association.
Yeah.
Some don't. Some go to the impersonal. But if they meet the right person, Vasudeva Savamiti Samahatma Sadulabha. It is rare that one of them will realize that, Krishna says. But if they realize that, that is perfection of their jnana. Any other point? My dear Lord, pure devotional service is even difficult for liberated persons to discharge. But devotional service alone can satisfy you. Who will take to other processes of self-realization if he is actually serious about the perfection of life? Simply by expansion of his eyebrows, invincible time personified can immediately vanquish the entire universe. However, formidable time does not approach the devotee who has taken complete shelter at your lotus feet. So Prabhupada emphasizes in the purport that devotional service and one who is performing devotional service is freed from the influence of time. Prabhupada said, for a devotee there is no death. And we see in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, in the pastime of Narada, that when he left this world, he was so absorbed in devotional service, he did not even realize that his material body had disappeared. So for one who is constantly engaged in ananya bhakti or undeviated devotional service, then he continues into the spiritual world. Whatever he is performing in this lifetime simply goes into the spiritual and continues to perform that activity. So that is the position of a pure devotee. So for a devotee, for all of us, we have no fear of death. Death is simply a change of body. And for a devotee it means that one will get a body like Krishna's. Such chit ananda vigraha. A body in which one can render unalloyed, pure, uninterrupted devotional service to Krishna. So if we practice devotional service in this lifetime, then we will get the sadhya. The sadhya means the goal of our sadhana, or the goal of our practice, is to worship Krishna with bhava. And by worshipping Krishna with bhava, one will be led to prema, by the association of Krishna's pure associates. Now Prabhupada also says that our devotional service is never destroyed. So even if one does not go into the spiritual world at the time of death, there is no loss, there is no diminution. Even a little devotional service rendered guarantees you'll take the opportunity to do devotional service again in your next life. Srila Prabhupada says that if someone takes prasadam, they're guaranteed a human birth. so many people are taking prasadam all over the world. So they guarantee they will take birth as human beings, in which they can again take through the process of devotional service. They can take more prasad. Okay. So that is the potency of the process. There is no loss, there is no diminution, and a little advancement can protect one from the greatest fear. So any points?
In the previous verse, for example, it says that devotional service is a bit difficult to do for the religious person. Why is it difficult for them?
Lord Shiva is saying, pure devotional service is even difficult for liberated persons to discharge, but devotional service alone can satisfy you.
I mean, those who liberate those who think that they are not body, they are soul. I mean, so why is it difficult for people to...
Prabhupada doesn't elaborate in the purport, as far as I can see.
But jnana can also liberate the people, right?
Yeah. Summer. Prabhupada doesn't elaborate on it, so I can't really say. So we're up to verse 57. We're continuing the prayers of Lord Shiva. If one by chance associates with a devotee, even for a fraction of a moment, he no longer is subject to attraction by the results of karma or jnana. What interest then can he have in the benedictions of the demigods, who are subject to the laws of birth and death? So we'll read that purport.
Out of three kinds of men, the karmis, jnanis and the bhaktas, the bhakta is described herein as the most exalted. Srila Prabhudasananda Saraswati has sung, Kaivalyam narakayate tridasa pura akasha pushpayate in Chaitanya Charitamrita. The word Kaivalya means to merge into the effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the word Tridashapur refers to the heavenly planets where the demigods live. Thus, for the devotee, Kaivalya Shukha, or merging into the existence of the Lord, is hellish because the bhakta considers it suicidal to lose his individuality and merge into the effulgence of Brahman. A bhakta always wants to retain his individuality in order to render service to the Lord. Indeed, he considers promotion to the upper planetary system to be no better than a will of the wisp. Temporary material happiness holds no value for a devotee. The devotee is in such an exalted position that he is not interested in the actions of karma or jnana. The resultant actions of karma and jnana are so insignificant to a devotee situated on a transcendental platform that he is not in the least interested in them. Bhakti yogi is sufficient to give the bhakta all happiness. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.6, Yayatma Suprasiddhati, one can be fully satisfied simply by devotional service, and that is the result of association with a devotee. Without being blessed by a pure devotee, no one can be fully satisfied, nor can anyone understand the transcendental position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
So what are the points in this?
One is that the bhakta wants to retain his individuality to serve the Lord. He does not merge in the appearance.
Everything is very trivial to a bhakta because he is so focused on the Lord. He is above jnana, he is above karma.
Any other points?
This is the
Any other points?
And I believe we can have done three groups, we can have done the course.
Jayatma Prasiddhi. Bhakta is always satisfied in the world.
Yeah, so Prabhupada mentions at the end of the purport, without being blessed by a pure devotee, no one can be fully satisfied, nor can anyone understand the transcendental position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mm. So this is how we become engaged in devotional service, by the blessing of a pure devotee. Mm. So actually, devotional service, in order to perform devotional service, it is necessary to satisfy the pure devotees. So we have to show our sincerity. We have to show our seriousness in advancing in Krishna consciousness, and this will attract the blessings of the pure devotees. If we do not show our sincerity, if we do not show our seriousness, then we cannot get their blessings. Without their blessings, we cannot progress. So we must get the blessings. Prabhupada explains in the songbook of the Vaishnava Acharyas that the whole process of Krishna consciousness is based on associating with pure devotees and seeking the blessings of the previous Acharyas. So that is our process. We pray to the previous Acharyas for their blessings that we can progress, and we keep association with pure hearted devotees. And this enables us to advance in Krishna consciousness. This is the entire process of bhakti. Any points?
See, the King of Heaven, he is always envious, looking for heaven and pleasure. But in 54, whether the King of Heaven wants
who says he is always in this?
Well, I mean, King Krishna, he did 100 sacrifices, but then he tried to destroy it. And he has done it quite a few times.
But what about all the good things that he does?
But does he really want to offer the
Lord Shiva says, in this particular, there's so many Indras. In one lifetime of Lord Brahma, how many Manus are there?
14.
That's one. Yeah. It's not even one day, I don't think.
13.
Yeah, it's in one, I can't remember what the distance is, but there is 500,000 Manus in the lifetime of Lord Brahma. So how many Indras are there? So Lord Shiva here is speaking about one of them who is quite pure. But anyone who is Indra is an advanced personality. Indra is not like an ordinary person. Like that. Any other points? Okay. My dear Lord, your lotus feet are the cause of all auspicious things and the destroyer of all the contamination of sin. I therefore beg your Lordship to bless me by the association of your devotees, who are completely purified by worshipping your lotus feet and who are so merciful upon the conditioned souls. I think that your real benediction will be to allow me to associate with such devotees. What about the problem?
The Ganges water is celebrated as being able to eradicate all kinds of sinful reactions. In other words, when a person takes his bath in the Ganges, he becomes free from all life's contamination. The Ganges water is celebrated in this way because it emanates from the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Similarly, those who are directly in touch with the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and who are absorbed in the chanting of His glory are freed from all material contamination. Such unawakened devotees are able to show mercy to a common conditioned soul. See that Vrindavana Dasa Thakura has sung that the devotees of Lord Chaitanya are so powerful that each one of them can deliver a universe. In other words, it is the business of devotees to praise the glories of the Lord and deliver all conditioned souls to the platform of Siddha Sattva, pure goodness. Here the word pure sattva means Siddha Sattva. The transcendental state beyond material goodness. By these exemplary prayers, Lord Shiva teaches us that our best course is to take shelter of Lord Vishnu and his Vaishnava devotees.
So what are the points? Anything else? What's that?
Therefore, best course is to take shelter of the Vishnu and Lord Vishnu devotees.
So, the pure devotee is so powerful that he can deliver everyone in the universe. Srila Prabhupada was so powerful he could deliver everyone in this universe. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, all of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers, Vrindavan Das Thakur says they're so powerful, the followers of Lord Chaitanya, they can deliver everyone in this universe. But that requires that everyone in this universe follows their instructions. The pure devotee can deliver us, but we must follow his instructions. That is the kripa, or the mercy, of the pure devotee. His mercy is his instruction. So by following the bani, or the instruction of the pure devotee, we can become delivered. But if we do not follow their instructions, then how do we become delivered? Just like one devotee wrote to Prabhupada, he said to Prabhupada, I have so many problems. Prabhupada said, you put all of those problems in front of me, and with one kick, I will remove all of them. So it requires that we follow the instructions of the Guru. Then we will become delivered. The Guru is powerful enough to deliver us, but whether or not we will hold on to his lotus feet. So it requires that the disciple is sincere and serious. A sincere devotee, he attempts to follow the Guru's instructions. A serious devotee fulfills the instructions of the spiritual master. He does not just meditate upon them, but he fulfills them. So if we are very serious in our devotional service, the spiritual master can deliver us from the cycle of birth and death. So, any points?
And then you are saying that Prabhupada, when he was talking about Prabhupada's life, and he was saying that Prabhupada was not even one of the foremost disciples of the Siddha Sankara. He had lots of sannyasi disciples at that time. Prabhupada was a grahastha who was sort of practicing Krishna consciousness at home. But he said the thing which differentiated Prabhupada was what he said, that he not only meditated, but he made the instructions of the Guru Maharaj as his life and soul. So earlier in the life, Prabhupada was not even considered to be one of the foremost disciples. He was not counted like that in the teachers and disciples, teachers and all. But because he was constantly meditating, and then he made his instructions to life and soul. Usually sannyasis are the foremost teachers and all the teachers. Because Prabhupada always was a grahastha, he became the foremost disciple.
Srila Prabhupada, one of his go-brothers, said that they used to read the prediction in the Chaitanya Bhagavat that the name of Lord Gauranga would be chanted in every town and village. But they thought that it was just an encouragement to everyone, but not that it would actually happen. But Prabhupada had a different understanding. He understood that it would happen. And he understood that it was his mission to make it happen. And one time, the devotees, they were trying to encourage Prabhupada, and they said to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they said, you know, we can encourage him to do like more preaching like that. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, you just leave him. He will do everything in good time. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur understood that Prabhupada was his most serious disciple. Any points?
Then I heard that as soon as his Guru Maharaj saw him, he said he was the one who is going to do everything for Bhagavad Gita.
No, when he saw him, he said, you're an intelligent young man. You should preach Krishna consciousness in the English language in the Western countries. That's what he said.
I think that somebody said that he needs to ask your brother.
And it's not recorded like that. If you read the Leela Amrita, it says that he tells the Prabhupada, you're a very intelligent young man. You should preach the message of Lord Gauranga in the Western countries in the English language.
Yeah, that is true.
I don't think so. He didn't look at Prabhupada's chart. It'd be superhuman. It's nothing to do with astrology. What Prabhupada did was not astrological.
No, actually, you know, when I was looking at the videos, memories of Prabhupada, this one Mataji, she was mentioning, when she went to Vrindavan, when she met one of Prabhupada's god brothers, he was telling to her that there was one devotee, there was one disciple of Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami, he is very good, and actually he wanted him to send to foreign countries, but he was so scared that Maharaj, if I go, if it's success, okay, if I fail, right, I will die there. Without seeing you, if I die, I'll go to hell. Then Maharaj Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati taken him and he said, you need not go, our Abhay Charan Babu is there, he will go, he will preach. That's what he said, that's what he mentioned.
Yeah, there is some mention of something like that. That would be great. Yeah. Any other points? The devotee whose heart has been completely cleansed by the process of devotional service and who is favoured by Bhakti Devi does not become bewildered by the external energy, which is just like a dark well. Being completely cleansed of all material contamination in this way, a devotee is able to understand very happily your name, fame, form, activities, etc. So we need to attain the favour of Bhakti Devi, the devotional energy of the Lord. The ultimate form of Bhakti Devi is Srimati Radharani, whose appearance day it is tomorrow. So tomorrow we should fully engage ourselves in chanting the glories of Radha and Krishna. We should fully engage ourselves in devotional service for the pleasure of Srimati Radharani. Srila Prabhupada said that even if you are a very foolish person, hands up if that includes you. Okay. So even if you are a very foolish person, Srila Prabhupada says, if you get the benediction of Radharani, then you will be accepted by Krishna. So all of us are very unqualified, although we tend to think we are very qualified. So those of us who understand we are not qualified, then we take shelter of Srimati Radharani. Because if Radharani blesses us, if she recommends us to Krishna, Krishna will accept our service. Okay. So that is our entire process. So the process is that we chant Hare Krishna. Hare refers to Srimati Radharani. So we approach Radharani first, and by her favour, then Krishna becomes accepting of us. Mm-hmm. Now, Prabhupada explains in the purport that the entire process of bhakti is based upon the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who teaches us to chant, hear and chant the glories of Krishna in the association of devotees. In the talks between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy, Lord Chaitanya emphasized this point, that devotees must hear and chant in the association of other devotees. This is the process. We must absorb ourselves in hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam and chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra with other Vaishnavas. And by continuously hearing and chanting with other devotees, the heart will become cleansed. This is the process which was accepted by Lord Chaitanya. When he was speaking to Ramananda Roy, he rejected many explanations of Ramananda Roy of what was the best path of self-realization. But finally, he accepted when Ramananda Roy began to emphasize that the best way to become self-realized is to hear and chant in the association of other devotees. And he said, yes, this is acceptable. And from there, Ramananda Roy was able to elaborate and go higher in terms of explaining devotional service to Radha and Krishna. So Prabhupada says that if a devotee is performing devotional service sincerely, he will lose his attraction to the material energy. Now how does that take place? Prabhupada says that the devotee must strictly perform the regulative principles. A devotee must follow all of the items of bhakti which are given. And on top of following all the items of bhakti, one must strictly avoid offences. And Prabhupada especially says there are 10 offences whilst chanting the holy name of Krishna, which Maharaj will elaborate upon tomorrow in the initiation ceremony. And there are 64 offences listed by Rupa Goswami which must be avoided in terms of worshipping the deity. So Prabhupada emphasized this point last night also, that in order to advance in Krishna consciousness, you must become very mindful of avoiding offences in devotional service. So you must know what the offences are. You must study the 64 offences in deity worship. You must study the 10 offences in chanting the holy name. The elaboration on the 10 offences in the chanting the holy name is given in the Harinam Chintamani by Srila Haridas Thakur, whose disappearance day it is next week. Right? So devotees must study these things. You must understand what are the offences, and you must diligently avoid committing offences in devotional service, and you must follow all the viti very carefully, the viti, all the positive regulations. You must chant your rounds attentively. You must hear the Srimad Bhagavatam attentively, with rapt attention. And you must engage in deity worship, association with devotees, properly. And you must reside in holy places. And this will deliver you from the cycle of birth and death. Okay. So we must follow the process strictly. The process is very efficient. It is very powerful. But it must be followed very strictly to get the result. So any other points? My dear Lord, the impersonal Brahman spreads everywhere, like the sunshine or the sky. And that impersonal Brahman, which spreads throughout the universe and in which the entire universe is manifested, is you. So Krishna explains this point in the Srimad, in the Bhagavad Gita. He says that all living beings are within him, but he is not manifest to them. So Krishna emphasizes this point, that ultimately everything is resting on the Brahma Jyoti. These effulgent rays, if you see the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll see there is the effulgence which emanates from Krishna, the Brahma Jyoti. This Brahma Jyoti is constituted or made up of Krishna's different shaktis, his potencies. So this is all of Krishna's power, this is his energy. Just like you see from the light bulbs come in, light or the energy of the light. So Krishna's energy emanates from him. This is the Brahma Jyoti. All of Krishna's potency is emanating from him. So this material world in which we are situated, the Mahatattva, is situated resting upon that Brahma Jyoti. So ultimately, it is a transformation of the pure spiritual energy. The Para-Prakriti becomes the Apara-Prakriti. The superior energy becomes the inferior energy. So everything is resting upon Krishna, ultimately. Krishna is everything in one sense, but he is simultaneously different from everything. And everything that we are experiencing is just a transformation of his energies. But ultimately, he is the source of all of those energies. He is different from them, but it is, in one sense, it is all him. So that is the perfect understanding which is taught by the Srimad Bhagavatam. Achintya, Veda, Veda, Tattva. So any points here? My dear Lord, you have manifold energies, and these energies are manifested in manifold forms. With such energies, you have also created this cosmic manifestation, and although you maintain it as if it were permanent, you ultimately annihilate it. Although you are never disturbed by such changes and alterations, the living entities are disturbed by them, and therefore they find the cosmic manifestation to be different or separated from you. My Lord, you are always independent, and I can clearly see this fact. So, now, Lord Shiva begins to explain the position of the living entity, or not just the living entity, but the position of Krishna's energies. In the previous section, he has mentioned how the living entity becomes purified by the process of bhakti. And now he describes the different energies in the Lord's creation. So he is emphasizing that the reason that the living entity is caught within the material world is because he is trying to imitate Krishna. And Prabhupada gives a nice example. Just like the child is at home and the mother is cooking. So the child says, I also want to cook. So the child cannot cook. Right? The mother doesn't let the child use the fire, it's dangerous. Doesn't let the child use all the ingredients because they're expensive. So they give them some Play-Doh. Now you give them some play pots, some play thing, and the child is pretending he's cooking, but not really cooking, but just pretending. Child thinks they're cooking. So in the material world, we are like that. We think we are imitating Krishna. We think we are enjoying, but actually we're not actually enjoying. You know, the material world is mostly suffering. It is not mainly enjoying. It's like we always give the example of your big toe. Right? How much happiness can you get from your big toe? How much suffering can you get from your big toe? So which is more, the suffering or the pleasure?
Suffering.
The suffering. So the material world is mainly suffering. So the living entity tries to enjoy, but actually mainly suffers. That is the nature of the material world. Dukalayam shashvatam. It is a place of principally of suffering. Now, Prabhupada says, he explains to us, how to become free from the suffering. This is explained by Rupa Goswami, the principle of Yukta Vairagya. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yukta Vairagya Uchite. That Nirbandha means if something cannot be connected to Krishna, we reject it. Just like if you read the notice on the notice board, Chintya Rupa Maharaji put up about the ghee. QBB. Ghee. Right? It's supposed to be ghee, but the people who have taken over the company actually, it's animal printed. This is Kali Yuga. Selling it as ghee, but actually it's not ghee. So therefore there's only one ghee as far as we know, because most ghee in India is actually impure. They add animal fat and so forth into the ghee to so they can sell more ghee, what they call pure ghee, but it's not actually pure ghee. Very hard to get pure ghee. So basically now there's one brand, Alauri, which we commonly use, you know, the one in the yellow bucket the temple uses. So this brand is pure. Right? It's been researched, it is pure ghee. But the others are not pure ghee. So they cannot be used in the service of Krishna, because they have some, either it is not what it is, or it is mixed with something impure, like that. So nirbandha, nirbandha means, if it cannot be used in Krishna's service, it is rejected. So now we've rejected this ghee. Useless. Right? And then, what do we do? Krishna sambandha. If something can be used in the service of Krishna, then we use it. And that purifies our consciousness. So if something cannot be used, you reject it. If something can be used, you use it in Krishna's service and you purify consciousness. So whatever attachment you have in this material world, you simply use it in Krishna's service and purify yourself of that attachment. Right? If you're attached to the opposite sex, right? If you're attached to women, right? Or if women are attached to men, then purify that attachment by engaging that relationship in the service of Krishna. Right? The husband and the wife, they assist each other in becoming Krishna conscious, and they purify themselves of that attachment. That is called yukta vairagya. That is renouncing something for my enjoyment, but still using the same thing in Krishna's service. So it's not falgu vairagya. It is not false renunciation. We do not say no one should get married, right? Which they do in some disciplines. They say no one shall get married. Everyone should. If you want to be self-realized, you must become sannyas. But in our system, we follow the process of yukta vairagya. Do not renounce it, but purify it by using it in the service of Krishna. So, any other points? My dear Lord, your universal form consists of the five elements, the senses, mind, intelligence, false ego, which is material, and the Paramatma. Your partial expansion, who is the director of everything, yogis other than the devotees, namely the Karma Yogi and Jnana Yogi, worship you by their respective actions in their respective positions. It is stated both in the Vedas and in the Shastras that are corollaries to the Vedas, and indeed everywhere, that it is only you who are to be worshipped. That is the expert version of all the Vedas. My dear Lord, you are the only Supreme Person, the cause of all causes. Before the creation of this material world, your material energy remains in a dormant condition. When your material energy is agitated, the three qualities, namely goodness, passion and ignorance, act, and as a result the total material energy, egotism, ether, air, fire, water, earth, and all the various demigods and saintly persons become manifest. Thus the material world is created. So Prabhupada interestingly explains in the purport what is the material world? Because as he has already explained, as Lord Shiva has explained, the material world is simply a transformation of Brahman. So therefore the material world is spiritual, in the sense that it is an emanation of the Lord himself. It is created by Narayana. And Narayana is the Supreme Lord himself. So therefore if something is created by a purely spiritual entity, then this material world must also be spiritual. Right? So then Prabhupada explains then what is material? What is material? Right? Material is a state of consciousness. Just like if you take some money, now that money can be used in a material way if your consciousness is material, or it can be used in a spiritual way if your consciousness is spiritual. Just like sometimes they gave the example, some devotees have given, They say a Christian walks down the road, right, and he sees some money on the ground, and he picks it up, and he may think, God is very merciful today. He has given me $100. So he puts it in his pocket and he uses it for himself. So that may or may not be. You're better off not saying. Some lawyers have said this example. They said a Christian, but actually it's a materialist, because not all Christians would do that. Okay. So we'll say a materialist. Right? A materialist walks down the road, he sees the money on the ground, he picks it up, he thinks, oh, I found $100, puts it in his pocket and uses it for himself, in sense gratification, for material purposes. Then a Buddhist, he will walk down the road, he will pick up the, oh, I'm sorry, he will see the money, and he will say, it is completely false. Yeah? Everything is false in this world. The money is false, and he will keep walking. He will not use it. So one uses in sense gratification, one does not understand its use. Whereas a devotee, he walks down the road, he sees $100 on the ground, he picks it up and he gives it to the person who it actually belongs to. Who does it belong to? Ultimately it belongs to Krishna. So he uses it in the service of Krishna. And in that way, he purifies that material energy. So the material energy, when used in the service of Krishna, it is spiritual. This is Yukta Vairagya. This is how to purify or to elevate your consciousness through using the material energy in the service of Krishna. When you use the material energy in the service of yourself for sense gratification, you become more entangled in the material world. When you use it for devotional service, you become liberated from the material world. Just like in English they have the saying, money is the root of all evil. But money is not good or bad. Money is nothing. Money is just a piece of paper. It is your consciousness which is good or evil. That is the point. So, any points here?
You should not try to balance all the
It depends where you are. Like if I was walking down Swanston Street and I saw a gold chain on the ground, then yeah, you could take it to the police and give it back, but or you could take it somewhere, sell it, and then use the money for Krishna. That's not wrong to do like that. If you're in a mall, like a place like, you know, like in a park, there's only a few people around or something, and then it wasn't there a few minutes ago and then it just dropped, so it's obviously someone who's very close, then yeah, you can try to return it to the owner like that. But I mean, if you're out in the middle of nowhere or in a place where there's hundreds of thousands of people, then yeah, you can do that. You give to the police and hand it. But then or you could use it in the service of Krishna. Both are good. Any other points? My dear Lord, after creating your own potencies, you enter within the creation in four kinds of forms. Being within the hearts of the living entities, you know them and know how they are enjoying their senses. The so-called happiness of this material creation is exactly like the bee's enjoyment of honey after it has been collected in the honeycomb. My dear Lord, your absolute authority cannot be directly experienced, but one can guess by seeing the activities of the world that everything is being destroyed in due course of time. The force of time is very strong, and everything is being destroyed by something else, just as one animal is being eaten by another animal. Time scatters everything, exactly as the wind scatters clouds in the sky. So Lord Shiva is pointing out that ultimately it is Krishna who is the destroyer. Normally it is seen that Shiva himself is the destroyer, but Shiva is seeing himself as simply an instrument of Krishna. So ultimately, it is Krishna who everyone must fear in the material world. Because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I am all devouring death. Time I am, the destroyer of the worlds. And I've come to destroy all people. That is the potency of the material energy. Ultimately, it is Krishna who destroys everything in the material world. So Lord Shiva is praying to Lord Krishna and understanding that he is all devouring death. Now a devotee does not see Krishna in such a fearful way.
Mm-hmm.
A devotee sees Krishna in an all attractive way. Therefore, as Radhanath Swami said when I was in Mumbai for his birthday one time, and I went to his birthday party, and there were about 300 devotees there, and they had a big kirtan, and Maharaj spoke, and Maharaj said, everyone is born to die. That is the nature of the material world. So your birthday is the symbol of your progress towards death. So that is all it is. So the devotee, and then Maharaj said that for the non-devotee, death is unattractive. But for the devotee, death is all attractive. Because all attractive means Krishna. Krishna is all attractive. So for a devotee, death is all attractive. Because it means he will see Krishna again. So there is no fear for a devotee. For a non-devotee, it is the most fearful thing. For a devotee, it is the most fortunate thing. Because if he has given his life to Krishna, then he will meet Krishna again at the end of his life. Any points?
Krishna clearly says that we are not the body. So that is actually quitting something which we are not actually. We are not the body. So the death is just like shedding off. That's what Krishna says. No. So again and again he says that we are not the body, we are not the body. No. You just fold and you just being covered.
Same point in chapter 2 in the purport, I don't know where Prabhupada says to, you know, when Krishna was speaking to Arjuna in chapter 2, Arjuna was so bewildered that he has to kill his grandfather and his teacher. Prabhupada in the purport says he should not be worried because they are pious souls in the next life. Their old bodies they lose, and since they are pious, they will attain Krishna. They will attain spiritual world, something he says. I did not remember exactly, but that's what he says.
Yeah. Easy to say it, but not easy to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Easy to say, that if any of us had to do with Arjuna, it was very difficult. Arjuna was shedding tears when he was shooting his arrows at Bhishma, his grandfather. It was not that he was enjoying doing it. Like that. It was very difficult. What Arjuna did, none of us could do. Okay. My dear Lord, all living entities within this material world are mad after planning for things, and they are always busy with a desire to do this and that. This is due to uncontrollable greed. The greed for material enjoyment is always existing in the living entity, but your Lordship is always alert, and in due course of time you strike him just as a snake seizes a mouse and very easily swallows him. So everyone is kept in this material world by lust, anger, and greed. Krishna says these are the three gateways to hell. So if you want to go to hell, then you cultivate lust, anger, and greed. Because these three qualities will take you further into the material world. But if you want to release yourself from the material world, then you have to purify these tendencies. Use your anger against those who are inimical to Krishna or Krishna's devotees. Use your greed to become greedy to hear the pastimes of Krishna from the lips of the pure devotees, and develop lust to always engage in Krishna's service instead of developing lust for your own sense gratification. Become lusty to always serve Krishna. Rupa Goswami says, I want to become attracted to Krishna just like a young boy is attracted to a young girl. Young boys always thinking of the young girl spontaneously, automatically, all of the time. So he says, let me also think of Krishna like that. Transform your lust into the desire to become attached to Krishna. Okay. My dear Lord, any learned person knows that unless he worships you, his entire life is spoiled. Knowing this, how could he give up worshipping your lotus feet? Even our father and spiritual master, Lord Brahma, unhesitatingly worshipped you, and the 14 Manus followed in his footsteps. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that someone who is wise, right, someone who is a pundit means a wise person, right, a learned person, right? Someone who is wise, then he understands that life is temporary. Yeah. Life is short. Prabhupada says in the purport, you'll only live 60 or 80 years. It's not a very long time. Right? 60 or 80 years. My life is half over. It says on my palm, I will live through 80 something. Right? Now I am 41. Right? So half over. Half finished. Okay. So life is short. We don't have a lot of time. So Prabhupada said, one who is wise, he understands this point. And therefore he dedicates his time and his energy for worshipping Radha and Krishna. That is the proper use of time. Prabhupada says, do not waste time. Time is short. Shorter than what we think. Okay, one more verse for tonight. And then next Monday I think we'll finish the chapter, and then we'll go back to chapter 30. For those of you who are keeping up with the reading for the course. You keeping up? What does that mean? Majestic. Okay. Did you see that video? You sent that, right? You sent that video to me, I think? You seen that video? It says in India when people go like this, it means yes. And when they go like this, it also means no. That's why I had to check. I wasn't sure if you. Okay. My dear Lord, all actually learned persons know you as the Supreme Brahman and the Super Soul, although the entire universe is afraid of Lord Rudra, who ultimately annihilates everything. For the learned devotees, you are the fearless destination of all. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, declare it boldly, Arjuna, my devotees shall never perish. What does this mean? It means the devotee has no fear. Fear is a material concept. Now, for one who has faith in Krishna, there is no fear, because he understands Krishna will protect me, right, at all times. Krishna never promises to protect the material body. There's nowhere in the Shastra where it says that he will protect the material body. There's nowhere. Krishna says, I will protect my devotee. It means he will protect your devotional service. So even if the body is harmed, or even if the body is destroyed, that your devotion is not destroyed. Krishna remembers that. So the devotee has no fear, because even if the body ceases to exist, then he will simply go into another body to serve Krishna. Okay. So we'll stop there, and then next week I think we'll complete the chapter and then go into chapter 30. Your open book exams are due next week, and we'll have the closed book exam in, I think, early October. We'll just have to finish chapter 30 and 31. Okay, so. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki